This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/ACAST, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/ACAST.
Speak the speech, I pray you, as I pronounced it to you, trippingly on the tongue.
But if you mouth it, as many of your players do, I had as lief the town crier had spoke my lines. Nor do not saw the air too much with your hand, thus, but use all gently. For in the very torrent, tempest, and as I may say, whirlwind of your passion, you must acquire and beget a temperance that may give it smoothness. Oh, it offends me to the soul to hear a robustious, periwig-pated fellow tear a passion to tatters, to very rags, to split the ears of the groundlings, who for the most part are capable of nothing but inexplicable dumb shows and noise. I would have such a fellow whipped for outdoing termagant. It out-Herod's Herod. Pray you avoid it.
I warrant, Your Honour.
You'd be not too tame, neither, but let your own discretion be your tutor. Suit the action to the word to the action, with this special observance, that you o'erstep not the modesty of nature. For anything so overdone is from the purpose of playing, whose end, both at the first and now, was and is to hold, as 'twere, the mirror up to nature.
Hello and welcome to The Play's the Thing. My name is Tim McIntosh. This is your podcast for all things Shakespeare, and you've joined us for a special episode on teaching Shakespeare. I'm joined by two of my friends. You have heard one of them before on this podcast, and those of you who have listened to kind of like the back catalog have also heard from the others. So I am welcoming Emily Maeda. Emily, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me. It's exciting to be here.
It's really great to have you back. And we're also welcoming your daughter, Mercedes Maeda. Hi, Mercedes.
Hey, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Mercedes, just so the audience knows, what year are you in school?
I'm a senior, 12th grade.
Okay, great. We gathered here today to talk about teaching Shakespeare. And one of the reasons that I'm talking to Emily and Mercedes is that we just all performed a Shakespeare showcase as part of the school, Emily, that you run and that you attend, Mercedes. And I wonder if we could start, Emily, by describing what we did. Like, we call it a Shakespeare showcase. What's a Shakespeare showcase?
Well, you're the one to really answer this because you're the one who introduced me to the whole idea.
I guess I did.
You did. But I can say the reasons that we did it, because I said, oh, I love to incorporate Shakespeare performance into our school. And you said, hey, I've done this thing before, a Shakespeare showcase where we have monologues. We have, especially the first year, we had small scenes of 2 to 3 people per scene.
Right.
And this is because you had done this in your own teaching career. Am I right?
That's exactly right.
And was it, I don't remember, was it for a class or was it part of college?
I did it when I was living in Eugene. A friend of mine, Sparky Roberts, was a teacher at Lane Community College. And she's the person, as far as I know, who kind of invented Shakespeare showcases. Huh. She would host once or twice a year for her students a Shakespeare showcase, and they would perform it in the Blue Theater at Lane Community College. And I got invited to act a couple of scenes, and it's where I just kind of fell in love with Shakespeare acting.
Oh, okay. I don't know if I remembered that.
Yeah. Maybe we talked about it at some point. Yeah, you remember Mercedes?
I remember Sparky. I remember that name.
Yeah.
You remember Sparky. Oh, right.
And she's been on the show as well, hasn't she?
She has been on the show. Yeah. She's on the Merchant of Venice
show.
That's
right. The Merchant of Venice.
So this podcast is ostensibly about teaching Shakespeare. So why are we talking about performing Shakespeare? Well, I'll just say why those two go hand in hand. For me, teaching Shakespeare is best done through performing Shakespeare.
I 100% agree.
Right?
I don't think it's possible to do it any other way.
That's controversial, but
I don't understand teaching it any other way.
I don't either. And I just want to like race forward to the kind of results that I think that we have seen from having students perform Shakespeare. And then I want to ask Mercedes after that to think back to the first time that you started performing Shakespeare and like, what were the challenges? So I want you to think about that now while I race forward and say, this is the fifth year that we have conspired together to perform Shakespeare with the Paideia School. Like you said, first year we did it, not many scenes, mm-hmm. not many actors. We mm-hmm. think we had maybe 12 actors and maybe we had 7 or 8 scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And we probably had 12 people in the audience, right?
Oh,
this year, I mean, that's I'm exaggerating. Yeah. It's probably closer to like maybe like 30 or 40. Yeah. This year, we didn't have 12 students. We had 43 students.
Yeah.
This year, we didn't have 30 or 40 attendees, 120, 150 attendees.
I think we had at least 150 because of all of the chairs we put up. And there was people standing.
And part of the reason that we had so many actors is because people have fallen in love during the last 5 years mm-hmm. with Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this story. My wife went to the performance and she told me this story afterwards. There was a young girl, 10 years old. She was a fairy. And
she's
one
seven,
of the
actually, this is
oh, she's seven. Even better. Yeah. Even better. In Midsummer Night's Dream, after the performance, she runs up to her friend, another 7 or 8 year old, and she grabs her by the shoulder and she says, "Shakespeare is so great."
Yeah.
You know, with like all of the passion that she could muster. And she's seven. And now, I mean, like, this is when we could tell story after story of students who are not necessarily going to be actors. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to like major in theater. They're not going to go on and have film careers, who have fallen in love with performance. And honestly, like, they walk out of performing their first Shakespeare monologue and they're different people.
Absolutely.
Their shoulders are squared up. Their backs are straight.
Yep.
Their chins are lifted in the air because it's such an accomplishment and it's so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a, I mean, it's a story of overcoming difficult challenges
sure
and like mastering something that's really hard.
Sure is. Before we talk about that, I think we should maybe just rewind a bit and say, why did the Paideia classical community choose to do Shakespeare Showcase as opposed to a play? Because when I mentioned it to you the first time, I was like, you know, a play seems totally overwhelming to me. And you said, okay, there's this other way you can go. You can do a Shakespeare Showcase. So we did it. And now I'm actually firmly convinced that this is such a great option for smaller schools, for schools that don't have a lot of resources, schools that are maybe hesitant to try it out. It's a great way to start and it can build, just like the story you're mentioning. We've now done it our 5 years. Now we have 43 students involved. But some of the benefits of a Shakespeare showcase as opposed to mounting an entire play are, it's easily done. I mean, any performance you do takes a lot of work, but it's
right.
comparatively easy to do. Another benefit, it involves so many people, just like you said, with these students who are not natural actors, but they find something within themselves and they become
yeah.
eloquent speakers. They are able to handle their nerves. They stand strongly and proudly before the audience. And you don't get that opportunity with a play. You have
right.
to, you know, you have a much more limited cast that gets this experience. And there's all of this auditioning and, you know, who has the best part? Because if you're going to see somebody for 3 hours, they've got to be able to carry the part.
Yes, right.
But the Shakespeare Showcase allows that student who is not going to carry a part for 3 hours to stand up and deliver a beautiful monologue or even a dialogue or even be part of a larger scene and do it really well. And do
yes.
it really well.
And be the lead actor when they would never be the lead actor.
That's a great point. That's a great point, Mercedes.
Yeah. yeah. So they get the experience of leading. And just like you said, Tim, I mean, maybe we can talk about some of the people, but we have seen amazing transformations of students because they have been given this opportunity.
Right.
So another thing that we don't spend a lot of time on sets. So I know that's a neat experience, but you don't have to do that. And that's part of the reason that it's possible for a smaller school, a smaller operation to actually do it. We don't have sets. We focus a lot on costumes, and our costumes, what did we have this year? 98 different costumes.
Yeah.
Because we have an amazing mentor at our school uh-huh. that put it all together. But, you know, also we gathered all of these costumes from the thrift store. I mean, we honestly put this all together from the thrift store.
Yeah.
Except for a couple of things from amazing. Amazon.
Don't tell people about that.
Yeah. So ease of the, you know, the thing that's amazing is that we had 6 practices after school until we had the dress rehearsal and then the final performance.
Mm-hmm.
And so, mm-hmm. I mean, that's part of the reason that this is so doable.
Yeah. And the practices were not like 3 hours like they usually are for full play.
Right.
They were like an hour to an hour and a half.
Right.
Yeah.
Because the students can run their scenes together. They can work on blocking. We even had student directors this year because we've been doing it for so long. So older students in the school coached younger students. So there's an amazing opportunity there. But I, for those reasons, and we've discussed it doing a Shakespeare play here, but for those reasons, for the transformation that comes to each student that participates, I love the Shakespeare Showcase for that reason.
Yeah, I do too.
And the audience really loves the variety. The audience really loves the variety of seeing tragedies, histories, comedies, right? All of it together. It's it really keeps the audience engaged. So,
and I think that they think, okay, this scene right now is a little bit of a dud. I'll wait 2 minutes and there'll be another scene coming out.
Exactly.
You know, you don't have to just suffer through 2 hours of mediocre performance. Exactly. It's uneven because you get beginners and really experienced actors, and you just wait out those who are beginning and you get to the more experienced, robust actors and you're like, great, great.
It's kind of like binge watching a TV show that's really good versus like having to sit through a really long movie that you're like, oh, this is so.
Yeah.
Is that a good comparison?
Yes.
Is that an
because it moves. It's like the episodes are only like 30 minutes and it moves super fast and you get super into it. And then it's just done. And you're like, wait, I just spent 3 hours watching that.
And if there's one dud in the series, so what?
Yeah.
Like the next one could be like the best show in the whole series.
And I think for audience members watching it, it's so fun. You are so interested as to what each child will bring.
Yes. Okay. So I now want to highlight one of our success stories. And I'm going to use his name, and I think because it's a victory story, and I think he'll be okay hearing
I
that.
Think that's fine.
When Isaac, who what grade is Isaac in, Mercedes?
Oh, seventh grader.
Yeah, seventh grade.
Oh, he's a seventh grader. So Isaac, 2 nights before the performance, was performing Hamlet, and he has a monologue at the end of this scene that he does with his father's, his father as a ghost. Let me back up and say, the opening audio that we heard at the top of this show was from Hamlet instructing actors on how to act. And I want to at some point touch on that. So anyway, Isaac, the seventh grader, was performing a monologue of Hamlet, and it's a very difficult monologue. And two nights before the show, he could not get through it. He did not have it well memorized. And he, if I'm not mistaken, had kind of like walked off stage in a flood of tears and kind of had to be consoled, you know, backstage because he was struggling so hard. Next night, night before the performance, markedly improved. And then he performs it on during the Shakespeare Showcase, knocks it out of the park, like absolutely slays the monologue. And what's so great is that all of his friends are back behind the audience watching him. These other 42 actors are watching him perform, and he slays his monologue and the audience claps. But behind the audience, there's this eruption of support from his castmates. It was so wonderful. And you can see in Isaac, he did it.
Yeah.
He did it. He fought through, like, it's embarrassing to fail on stage. And believe me, I know intimately how embarrassing it is to fail on stage. And he fell short, but he's like, you know what? I'm going to keep working. Yep. And he kept working and he delivered a delightful performance. And really, it's almost like ontologically, Isaac's a different guy now.
Completely.
Right?
Completely. I'm also thinking, it's Hamlet also. I was thinking of the first year we did it. And we had another performer who really had never, I mean, he was so nervous in public speaking, so nervous. He would like draw in his breath in a particular way. And same thing. Do you remember that? Was it To Be or Not To Be?
Yeah.
And same thing, like after that performance, stood up, delivered speeches, you know, finally in his senior year of high school, delivered a fantastic senior thesis defense. But I mean, a lot of that came from what he learned.
Yeah.
By standing in front of the audience.
Mercedes, you performed in all five of the Shakespeare showcases, but I want you to go back before the very first one. You're working on the first scenes that you ever performed. Can you remember what were the things, what were the big obstacles for you as you were preparing for the first time to perform?
I think the biggest thing is memorization and like being able to understand the language and like where the character is at in the development and not just taking it out of context. So yeah, memorizing just takes a lot longer when you're first starting out.
Yeah.
Because all the words, it's like a different language. It's like you're learning a different language and it's just confusing.
Yeah.
And so it takes a lot longer to get well-versed in the rhythm of the language and just the words themselves.
Right. To understand what's being said.
Mm-hmm. Like really understand it.
What are the two dictionaries that we have? I'm forgetting. We have two big dictionaries. So at the beginning of, who are they published by? Oh, it's slipping my mind. Do you know, Tim? It's Shakespearean English Dictionary.
I think Oxford does one.
Maybe that's the one we have. We bring them like the first few weeks that we start practicing and students are required to look up words that they don't understand. And even sometimes words that they do understand that are being used in a different manner than they're used now. And that is an important part of getting them to the place of understanding. Mm-hmm. I think Mercedes said to me the other day, I hope this isn't the only thing I've given you, but she did say to me, well, Mom, there's one thing you've given us. We all understand Shakespeare.
It is because it's like another language. And what's great,
it is like another language.
We go to the Shakespeare Festival every summer. And when we first started going, I was like, I didn't understand any of it. But now, since we've read it so much and performed it so much, I go and we can immediately understand what's happening, what the different words they're saying are.
Absolutely.
I think another.
But thing,
go ahead.
Oh, I just want to say, don't lose your place. I just want to say, what we're really asking you to do is exactly what you said. We're asking you to memorize a speech or a dialogue, which is hard enough in itself. And then we're saying, but we actually want you to memorize it in Spanish.
Yeah.
I don't speak Spanish.
Yeah.
We'll memorize it anyway.
Yeah.
That's a huge ask for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
A really huge ask. Okay, your second point.
So the memorizing part is hard when you're getting ready and it like throws you off track. And you forget that you're actually supposed to be acting too, and you're not just supposed to be saying words.
Right.
And so once you get the words, then you're like figuring out your place. Just being on a stage with like only one other person is terrifying.
Yes.
And if you're by yourself, it's even more terrifying.
Nowhere to hide.
Right.
Nowhere to hide.
But then getting on the stage and having your speech memorized or your dialogue memorized and realizing, oh, wait, it's not me who is saying these words. It's this character. And who is this character? And how do they stand? And how do they deliver their words? Are they nervous? Are they angry? Are they both? And that's like, because you get it memorized and you do it well, you get to enter into this different world almost for like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And become a different person.
Totally.
And that
totally.
That aspect of taking on another character, I think, is so helpful for teens inhabiting another's world.
Especially since all of Shakespeare's characters, most of them that we perform, are old.
Mm-hmm.
And like entering into like a more
mature,
sagacious mind that we all have, and entering into the more just the complexity of emotion that he puts into their characters
it's good. So good. It's so helpful. It's so helpful to inhabit another. It builds empathy, does it not? It builds empathy.
Yeah.
And it builds an ability to think like other people think, right? Because that's what you're saying. You are translating not just how do I feel, but how does this character feel?
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to embody that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, that when we were talking about teaching Shakespeare, that piece of embodiment, I just don't know how you get that any other way.
Yeah. You definitely don't get it by just sitting at a desk
and reading
with a big open collected Shakespeare in front of you. You don't get it that way.
Don't get it.
Because we do that in sophomore and junior year. We read plays.
Right.
We read The Tempest, King Lear, Macbeth, a couple other ones. And it's just, it was so much more boring.
Yeah. Oh, nice. For sure.
When we were reading them at home, and then we would come to class and we would all like talk about, oh my goodness, I can't believe this character. And then we would get up and we would all act it together. And then, that's what was happening.
Because
we get everybody else's different interpretations or readings of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you move and you're like, oh, wait, they're actually acting a play here. I'm not just reading some people talking.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because in our more specific Shakespeare study, we are still, we're not spending time memorizing everything, but each week's students come with certain portions prepared so that they can read the words and then they get up and do a dramatic reading. Mm-hmm. So even in our school time when I'm teaching Shakespeare, I'm having them act as much as they can.
Yeah. I love that. To go back, Mercedes, to the point that you're making, the text makes so much more sense when you stand up with all the actors who are going to be in the scene and start saying the words. I'm thinking to the audio that we heard at the top of the podcast. Speak the speech, I pray you, as I pronounced it to you, trippingly on the tongue. But if you mouth it, as many of your players do, I had as lief the town crier had spoke my lines.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you just hear that and you can't see Hamlet walking with another actor, instructing him on how he wants him to act, then you're like, it's just Spanish. I don't know what's being said right now. But you can imagine Hamlet's arm around the main actor. Speak the speech, I pray you, as I pronounced it to you trippingly on the tongue. So now you're thinking, like, what does that mean, trippingly on the tongue? Because it's these instructions, and I can kind of figure out the meaning of what I think Hamlet is saying just by that other actor being on the stage receiving instruction for Hamlet. And that makes, I think, even people that have the best of imaginations, when they're just reading to themselves and they're not looking at live breathing characters on the stage, you just miss a lot.
You do.
Yeah. And even like I started reading the plays that we would read the whole entire play out loud.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is also part of
like trippingly on the tongue. That's an alliteration that gets more life by saying it out loud.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. That's right. I want to kind of camp on this monologue of Hamlet's for a little bit, because it's funny the things that he warns his actors against are all of the things that you see.
It's good advice.
Great advice.
Yeah.
Because you see it in first-time actors all the time. It's like...
The hands. I was thinking of one of
those. Saw not the air. Saw not the air. Oh my gosh. How many times have I, as a beginning actor, sawed the air with my hand?
Yeah.
Or even just flopped in the air.
I was thinking of our first year in the Henry V dialogue. And I remember working with this actor like, no, your hands can't flop this way. Like, you've got to have a definite action. What is that definite
Definitely.
Action?
Yep. Yeah, for sure.
Trippingly on the tongue. It's really good. It's something that we were talking with them. Enunciate, you know, because my son Theo was Romeo, and he actually did a great job.
He did a great job.
Oh, another reason this is a great thing to do. It helps students think about falling in love and what that might look like.
Right.
No matter
maybe
how
even before they've fallen in love.
Yeah. No matter how uncomfortable. Anyway, he was having difficulty with it. And he was, I can't remember the speech with Juliet, what part it is, but he was saying something. I was like, what are you saying? Because all the words are running together.
Love's light wings.
Yes, love's light wings. What are you saying? But, you know, having them enunciate their words, boy, such great practice. Mm-hmm.
And love's light wings, it's a little bit of a tongue twister.
Exactly.
So you want to mumble it together.
Love's
light wings. If you do say it trippingly on the tongue, it's so lovely. It's such a beautiful little phrase. It's like a little phrase of music. Like, I think I know what it means, but I do know this. It sounds absolutely gorgeous.
Exactly.
And even more gorgeous when it's articulate, when it's trippingly told on the tongue.
When you can understand it.
Right, right. Absolutely. Okay. So I just want to give a little bit of like theory behind what we're talking about. For me, performance, public performance, allowed performance instructs us on the meaning of words. So I have this little exercise that I've done. I think I did it back before our very first show, Shakespeare Showcase. Maybe I didn't even do it with your crew.
No, I think you did. I think you did.
The idea, well, there two things happen in these exercises. The first is you kind of discover the meaning of the words. And the second thing that you do is you get students over their natural inclination to be shy and reserved and scared of performing. So if you're a teacher out there and you're like, okay, this really sounds great, but my students are never going to perform Shakespeare. They're just too shy. They're too reluctant. They don't have any acting background. I encourage you to just try this and then revisit that question. Get your students, get a one page, a very short scene with between two people, line half the class up on one side, line the other class up, the other half of the class up on the other side in like lines facing each other, and have each actor, each line perform one line from the scene and then go to the back of the line. And then the other person, the other line responds, goes to the back of the line. And so you get kind of this conveyor belt of different lines, of these two lines performing to each other. I hope that makes sense. And the way that you do it, the three exercises are everybody perform the first time that you perform the worst performance you can perform. Make it awful, terrible, worse than you can imagine. And what happens is students know how to do this. They will mumble. They will look at their shoes when they're performing, or they'll like maybe saw the air thusly, they'll do it really badly. And then after everybody goes through, stop and say, okay, what made the performances so bad? And they'll tell you, well, we were looking at our feet. We were mumbling. We didn't know what we were saying. And you're like, great. So if the opposite is to perform a great scene, mm-hmm. What are the opposite things? Mm-hmm. They'll tell you, we need to have chin up, speak loudly, mm-hmm. speak clearly, mm-hmm. right? And you're like, yep, those are the things you need to do. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, second exercise is go through the same scene, same lines as fast as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. And I would have the lines go through at least two, if not three times. Just when you finish the scene, go to the top of the scene again and go as fast as you can. Speak, get it out as quickly as you can. And then third exercise is do it as big as you can. Mm-hmm. Over-exaggerated circus gestures. By the time you get through the third exercise, doing it as big as you can do it, your actors, your students are going to actually know what they're saying.
Yeah, right. Because they've
right
so many times. Yes. Well, I think you're hitting on another piece of performance that's so important. Students think that they're giving you what emotion you're asking for, and they never understand that to communicate it to an audience, it generally has to be 10 times what they're doing, right?
Absolutely.
So that, and the thing you're working with is extreme. So underdoing it, okay, they can do
that. Yep.
Now overdoing it. I was working with another student this year and I said, okay, give me now 10% more. And now give me mm-hmm. 50% more. And I was like, nope, that's simply not it. You haven't done it. You haven't done it. So I was saying that, she was trying, but it also requires a teacher who will push until they can really get there. You know?
Yeah.
And this
yeah.
girl, actually, she was one of our success stories this year too. After she worked and she worked and she was trying and she went home the night before and she worked really hard with her sister. And then the night of the performance, she said, I actually acted. And we said, yes, you did.
Do you feel comfortable sharing the name?
Yeah. Glory.
Wait, who?
Glory in Love's Labor's Lost.
Oh, she was great. She was great.
Right. But she kept going. But it's that.
She kept going.
It's actually teaching them that they've got more than they think they have.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that doing it huge sometimes helps some students get there, but sometimes you have to do it lots of times before they actually respond.
Right. Cause like
lots and lots of times
acting is uncomfortable. Like it's not supposed to be uncomfortable. And so like
yeah.
when you do it huge and you know it's supposed to be uncomfortable, then it's fine. But you should just expect that it's uncomfortable most of the time.
Yeah.
100%.
But that's kind of fun.
Yeah, it is kind of fun.
The beautiful thing that they get through performance is that achievement of like, I did something that's hard.
Yeah.
And, yeah. The students invite their parents, their grandparents, people from the community. And, people by and large do not understand Shakespeare. They often say, I could understand it from how these kids were acting it.
Yeah.
I feel so much satisfaction in recognizing they actually get it. They actually understand it. They actually know what's being said.
And the thing about it is that when you, not that I've really acted anything. Well, I did the thing for you.
She acted at the national conference for Circe.
Yes, she did. Yes, she did.
When you act characters that are younger, that are less developed, I'm thinking of like High School Musical type thing where it's like, you just don't take the characters as seriously because they're super well written. But something about Shakespeare is like, you take these characters seriously because like you know people like the characters, or maybe you're like, I don't know anybody like the characters, but I can imagine that they exist.
Hopefully you don't know people like all the characters.
Not all of them, but like that. Yeah. Okay. Not the tragedies. But you know what I mean? Like,
right. Right.
These characters, like, they just seem real. And
yeah,
they seem real.
Seriously. And there's something rewarding about that. More rewarding than when you don't take them seriously.
I want to talk about a struggle that you had, Mercedes, with one of the characters that you play. I'm going to set it up for you, okay? You both know what I'm talking about. There's a scene in the play Richard III. If you want to hear our podcast on Richard III, I think we did it maybe 4 months ago. Emily and I did it. We love that play. It's a tragedy about Richard III, a usurper to the throne. And in the third scene of the whole play, he decides, okay, I'm going to get together with Queen Anne because that's my surest way to the throne. And I got to get Queen Anne. Oh, yeah, there's only a couple of problems here.
Few problems.
I killed her husband and I killed her dad.
Father-in-law.
Other than that, I think I got a shot, right? So third scene, Richard steps onto the stage and Queen Anne is kind of like in the hearse line with her dead father's body. And I'll just say from the outside, Mercedes, when Richard is like, yeah, I'm going to get together with Anne. I've killed her husband. I've killed her dad. You're kind of like, this is never going to work, bro. This is never going to work. And by the end of the scene, he's pulled it off. Okay, now talk about playing Queen Anne. Not easy for you.
It's horrible because she starts out so strong and you're like, yes. She calls all of his bluff. She's like, you're the snake who's horrible.
A basilisk.
Yeah, like, leave me alone.
Yeah.
Like, he's super disrespectful for that time, especially like when there's so much decorum around.
I'm around mourning. Yeah. Right. You are not getting married.
Like, seduce a woman whose husband has just been killed by you. And so she's like,
but Richard makes the point. I didn't actually kill him. It was my friend actually, or my brother. Right.
And she's like, she calls all of his bluff. And then by the end, I still don't know if I fully understand her.
Yeah.
But she gives in.
And she marries him.
Yeah.
And she marries him.
And then he kills her. And I'm like, well, you know. There
yeah.
You go.
Like, of course you got killed by him. Right. She gets a little bit of revenge because her ghost comes and haunts him the night before the battle in which he's slaughtered. But I don't know if that's a really satisfying conclusion.
Despair and die.
Okay, so, but for you, Mercedes, like, you're playing this role and you don't want Queen Anne to go the direction that she goes. And you're also finding it kind of implausible that she would go there. How did you get there?
I feel like so much of acting is like somehow it just like magically happens on the night of the performance that you just become the character.
Yeah.
I mean, I had to think about it a lot, though, and think about different ways to deliver the last couple of lines where she's kind of like, she doesn't say much by the end, but she listens a lot more than at the beginning. And so being able to actually hear what, like, listening to Richard's lines and trying to be like in her character thinking, or maybe she's not thinking through it. I kind of turned off by the end. Not turned off, but like, I think she kind of shuts down. That's what it feels like.
Because it feels like, well, maybe that's what helped you make peace. There wasn't a lot of other avenues for her to go.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That sort of helped you make peace with it.
Yeah.
Because what else did Queen Anne have? She's in a very
She's cornered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's cornered.
Yeah.
Mercedes, so
it came off convincingly.
It did come off very convincingly. But I know it was like a struggle in the lead up, not because you didn't have the lines, you had the lines, not because you didn't have the character, you had the character, is because just like, I don't want this to happen.
I'm like, just fight harder, okay? Like, right. Become destitute, that is better than marrying this guy.
That's right. Mercedes, I don't know if I've told you this story, but I played Polixenes, King Polixenes in The Winter's Tale. And there's a scene in the second half of that play in which my son, who's, you know, like maybe 18 years old,
Florizel,
falls in love with who I believe is a peasant girl who is beneath his station because she's far beneath my station. And they're about to get married, and I'm disguised as kind of like a beggar. And I'm seeing this wedding about to take place, and I step into the middle of it right when he says, "Mark our marriage." And I say, "Mark your divorce, young sir, whose son I dare not call." And it's vicious. It's so vicious. He basically says, because you're willing to marry this milkmaid who I perceive to be below me, you are no longer my son. I kind of like, you are beyond my embrace. I disown you. And it's so awful. It's like maybe a little bit of the struggle that you were having with Queen Anne. Like, it's so awful. It's so cruel. And so what I would do is we staged it really beautifully. He kind of like falls down, does Florizel, and I have this shepherd's crook, and he's looking away from me. He doesn't want to like hear what I have to say. And I reach out with the shepherd's crook, and I lift his chin up so that he has to look at me like, "I'm still your dad." You have to. It's just a brutal scene, and we staged it brutally. So I would walk off stage. He tries to patch things up with his girlfriend, and then he follows me off stage. And I would seriously wait off stage for the actor playing Florizel, and we would hug it out off stage. It was so bad. It was so bad. We always, every performance, we had this kind of sweet moment. It was like, "Hey, I didn't mean it, buddy. You're like, you know, I still love you." It was great.
Yeah. That's a challenge, inhabiting roles that you would. It was also a challenge for Richard. Richard had trouble like being cruel and creepy, right? He had trouble with that.
Yeah, I believe that. Listen, I want to thank both of you for coming on. Our hope is that this is kind of an encouragement for teachers who maybe respect Shakespeare but don't love Shakespeare, for students who are like, "Oh my gosh, do I really have to read Midsummer Night's Dream or Romeo and Juliet? Do I really have to do this?" That there are other avenues to not just understanding Shakespeare, to actually kind of like falling in love with Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. Shakespeare Showcase is it's really easy to do. It's a great way to do it. And my little exercises of just like lining up your room, worst performance, fastest performance, biggest performance. I've yet to see it not unlock students to give them some freedom to actually kind of like have some fun with the text and have fun moving their body and inhabiting these characters in that physical way. Mm-hmm. Mercedes.
And to like, it gives the kids permission to not take it so seriously.
Right. Right.
Because it feels like such a serious thing that when you're like, wait.
It's intimidating.
This is actually,
I can do it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I just can't recommend it highly enough.
That's a ringing endorsement.
With your community. Do this with your school. It's this year we had 43 students. We had 16, 17, 18 scenes.
Yes. 17 scenes.
It was 2 hours long. Tim and I were both terrified that the audience was going to revolt. The audience loved it.
They loved it. Yeah.
Loved it.
What? Don't do that on your first year, though.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't do that on your first year.
Start small.
Start seven. Start six or seven. That's right.
Yeah. And you have all of those scenes on your website.
TimTeachesShakespeare.com. I have 40 scenes that are edited for performance. Go and there's like descriptions. You can search like, "I want female monologues. I want two actor plays," whatever. You can search according to each of those things, download as many scenes as you want. It's all free. And yes, send me a note if you do that. Say, "I heard you on the Plays the Thing. I heard Emily and Mercedes on the Plays the Thing and I got inspired." Send me a message.
Yeah. People should feel free to reach out if there's more questions. We'd love to help people.
reach out to me on the website. And if you want to talk to Emily and Mercedes, I'll make sure that it happens. Thanks, you guys, for joining me.
I didn't mean to volunteer you to.
No. It's great. It's great. I'll be your liaison. No problem. Thanks, everybody, for joining us on The Play's the Thing, your podcast for all things Shakespeare. Coming up soon, we will have our last two plays in Shakespeare's canon, Merry Wives of Windsor, which I'll be doing with Sarah Jane Bentley, and then our last play before we close out the complete cycle, King John. And I'm going to have a little reunion podcast with David Kern, Heidi White, and Sean Johnson. They were all kind of part of the original tribe that launched this podcast. And we'll also be talking soon about what will happen to The Play's the Thing now that we have completed the whole cycle. And Emily and I have a podcast that we are going to launch probably within the next year. And there'll be details to follow about that. Thanks again for joining us. And as always, enjoy your Shakespeare.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.